have on the phone with me, Quentin Wine. Welcome, Quentin.
Mister, how are you?
Pretty good. So today we're going to talk about integrated pest management for indoor plants.
So we are.
What exactly is integrated pest management?
So integrated pest management, or IPM, is essentially a holistic approach to establishing and maintaining healthy plants. We're exposed to outdoors and indoors, of course. More than that, it's an approach that seeks to minimize any adverse effects by simply having or maintaining the plants. The first IPMs evolved to minimize and avoid the use of chemicals in dealing with pests. So IPMs are designed to allow and create healthy gardens by encouraging ecosystem health and building natural pest control into our garden to reduce air and other contamination by reducing the use of chemicals, which can linger in the air and during our application and accumulate in soils, and by lessening resistance that might build up in pests through the use of chemicals. Because all of those things apply to the use of chemicals inside your home as well as outside. So there's four principles of integrated pest management, which include monitoring, diagnosis, establishing an action threshold, and control measures.
So what does monitoring involve? We'll start with that.
Okay, so monitoring means developing and committing to a schedule of caring for your plants and evaluating their condition and needs. Ideally, the conditions should be always be good and their needs should be few, so there should be little effort involved. It's when you ignore them that things go wrong. So monitoring means keeping an eye on them and reacting to anything that comes up. This can be achieved by simply keeping awareness of what the temperature in your house is like and what the humidity is like, and keeping plants away from cold drafts, fireplaces, and heat sources like heat registers or other heating elements. Also, it means being mindful about when you're acquiring soils and pots and what plants you collect. A basic understanding of plant physiological processes is helpful, but it's not necessarily needed.
Okay, interesting. So let's move on to diagnosis. Do you have to have a plant doctor for this?
No, not at all. Anybody can do it. You just need to have a basic understanding of what the plant looks like when things are right and when things are wrong. So there's a concept called the disease triangle, which describes the three basic factors that lead to disease. You need a pathogen, which it means like a virus or a fungi that's going to attack your plants. You need the susceptible plant to begin with, and you need the environment in which the pathogen can attack your plant. The key is to understand how these three factors work and how they interact.
Okay, so where do we begin?
When you're monitoring, the first thing is to check the plant first and feel the soil. As always, we always try to emphasize, the key is to avoid overwatering and make sure the top inch of soil is dry before you apply more water. Next, look for signs of distress or any damage of any kind, and especially signs of a pest. If there is damage, you got to make sure that whether the cause is biotic, meaning a living pest, or abiotic, meaning just about anything else that could happen. Biotic pests can include diseases resulting from fungi, from bacteria, or from viruses, but also humans, such as kids or animals that could break the plants when they walk by or what have. And also your cat might be chewing on plants in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So for the sake of argument, we'll include viruses here as living pests, even though there's some debate over whether they're really technically living.
So how do you know what you're dealing with?
It helps to have experience, but common sense should really do. If you look back to the disease triangle, you need the pathogen and the environment, and that usually means the soil that the plant is living in. Culprit is usually overwatering, and continually wet soil often leads to root rot. Root rot and stem rot are caused by a variety of fungal organisms, with Fusarium, Pythium, Rhizoctonia, Pythophora being the most common. Those fungal pathogens thrive in soils that drain poorly and remain wet, infecting the root system of plants that are stressed and weak and may be dormant in winter. This can sometimes happen when two or more people are looking after the plants and don't tell each other that they're watering the plants. The symptoms of root rot and stem rot include the infected plant wilting from the bottom to the top, even though the soil surface may be dry, as well as foliage and stems turning brown, yellow, or black. Additionally, the roots will be mushy and brown or black instead of a healthy white. There may be a rotten smell from the roots or other affected parts of the plant. Prevention is key in eliminating root and stem rot in your house. Okay, so pathogens can also show up as fungal leaf spots that show up on the foliage and could be brown, black, reddish, yellow, or tan. These spots often grow together and result in leaf drop and distortion.
What about the spots on the leaves? I often hear that complaint.
This is especially true when the potting makes it consistently wet and the plant's foliage remains wet for long periods, especially at night. And that can also happen indoors. You know, if you have a big plant, apply the water, but it's landing on the leaves instead of the soil surface. Period of time where the water is sitting on the surface of the leaf can get to that condition. You can prevent fungal leaf spot problems by increasing the percentage of humidity in your home. Ideally, it should be between 45 and approximately 55%, and you can adjust that through a humidistat. You can water early in the day when the plant is somewhat more active physiologically. You can avoid having water on the leaves, as I said. You can keep some space between the plants so that air can go between the leaves of individual plants. And you can avoid reusing infected potting mix. Here, it's kind of penny-wise and pound foolish to try to reuse soil where you've had a condition occur. Another one is powdery mildew, which is a common name for several fungi species of Oidium, and it's most prevalent in houseplants during the winter months when your temperatures are a little bit cooler and humidity is high in your house because it's sealed so tightly against the elements outside. In this case, wet foliage and dead material on the surface are usually the cause, so your integrated pest management plan should include practices to avoid these conditions that enable the infections arising to begin with. Even worse, fungal spores in your house that are affecting your plants are easily spread by air circulation, like a heating system, and can quickly affect other plants in your house.
And are there other common diseases that can be dealt with through an IPM?
Of all the common houseplant diseases, viruses are the most deadly because there's no cure. There's a wealth of different types of viruses that can infect a houseplant, and in some cases, more than one virus can infect an individual plant. Plants with viruses often carry the infection with them from the infected mother plant from which they propagated in the first place, perhaps back in the nursery where you got the plant or at a friend's home. You can also give your plants a virus by using infected pots or utensils that haven't been cleaned or have even minute traces of sap or other plant parts that carry the virus. Also, people that are in your home that might use tobacco products, including cigarettes or cigars, or even chewing tobacco, might infect your plants because tobacco mosaic virus is often spread through the use of those plants. If you have a person that uses tobacco, they should wash their hands before handling any house plants because that mosaic virus can easily be passed on just by touch. That's also another good reason not to use those products. You know, it's an interesting side note that the work of Wendell Stanley in identifying and isolating the tobacco mosaic virus was largely the basis for humanity's understanding of all viruses today, including the Corona-19 virus. It earned him a Nobel Peace Prize for Chemistry in 1946.
Interesting.
Some of the signs that you're dealing with a virus include abnormal discoloration of flowers, distorted shape, dead spots or yellow rings on the foliage, abnormal dark green and light green mosaic and mottling patterns on the leaves, streaking and light and dark green or yellow patches on the leaves, and overall a stunted growth on the plant. So often it's difficult to tell a fungus between a virus, but you can gain that experience over time. Really, there's no way to treat a viral condition other than carefully discard the plants and soil altogether. Also, if you're going to use alcohol to sanitize your utensils, your cutters or your spoons or whatever you're using to grow your plants, you've got to make sure that it's at least a 70% isopropyl alcohol. The 3% variety that you can get at the drugstore for different purposes is really too weak. I mean, you can use that stuff to clean your contact lenses in. You're better off using a bleach solution of 900 mils of water to every 100 ml of bleach to make a liter of solution.
Interesting. And what about critters?
In addition to their own havoc, sucking pests like aphids and thrips can also pass viruses and fungi onto an otherwise healthy plant. But again, monitoring practices within an IPM will alert you to a pest problem before it evolves into a viral problem. Also, you can't really deal with them until you deal with what invited them there. Otherwise, they're just going to come back. So an effective plan should involve at least, when you get new plants, knowing where they came from and only taking healthy-looking plants, whether they come from a nursery or from your friends, knowing and monitoring your interior environment and taking steps to protect plants from it, resisting the temptation to use portions of a virus-infected houseplant as propagation material. You know, even if the plant looks absolutely disease-free, it's likely infected throughout with the virus. Mm. Also, sterilizing your pruning tools, blades, utensils, whatever you're using to work on them, and wiping them off with, as I said, at least a 70% alcohol solution or straight 70% alcohol. You can also develop a way to control your watering and avoid giving pests to healthy plant. And that could mean, you know, sticking to a schedule, whether it's I water every Thursday or what have you, but also checking before you water to make sure that the top inch of soil is dry before you add more water.
And you mentioned an action threshold. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, an action threshold really applies more to outdoor programs, but it can be applied indoor too. The action threshold is the point where you decide to actually intervene in the plant in order to affect its well-being. So, for example, if overwatering is caught early, you can just stop overwatering, and you don't really have to take any further action. If there's yellow leaves and the situation is getting really bad, then you really need to do something. You can establish ahead of time at what point you're going to intervene and when you're going to take a passive approach. This is especially true of critters. So if you find one bug on the plant, but no other bugs, then you should just pick it off and really you don't have to take any further action. If there's more, then there's a point where you should take some further concerted action, and that's your action point.
And finally, what about control measures?
Yeah, here we're using the word measure in the sense of an action that can be taken. So when your monitoring indicates that some sort of pest control is required and your preventative measures and methods are no longer effective or available, then your IPM will describe the proper control measure or tools that you can use to make sure that you're having an effective and minimal impact. So usually your plan includes an escalating series of options that you can take, ranging from, as we said, just picking off one critter and getting rid of it, to the most dramatic red measure, which is actually getting rid of the whole plant. Sometimes you want to get rid of one plant in order to prevent a condition from spreading to others. So you can decide ahead of time whether resorting to a chemical treatment might be a part of that, or factor in potential adverse effects of that chemical into your decision-making, whether you want to try something else. Is it worth possibly harming Rover or small children in the house with chemicals in order to save that philodendron? You know, you really have to think about it.
Good point.
It really depends on the factors in your specific household.
Well, there sure is a lot to consider.
Yeah, it is. There is, but it all depends on how seriously you want to take the investment that you made in acquiring and protecting your houseplants. Having an effective IPM can save you a lot of time and money and frustration. But it's just a little bit of planning effort before you encounter any problems. So it's like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Again, not having a plan is the kind of way of having a plan. And the whole idea behind an IPM is to give the growing plants in your house some forethought to help you achieve success. You know, having houseplants is more than just the occasional watering. It's assisting them to grow and defending them from harm. And that really takes a coordinated effort.
Well, you've given us a lot of great information today, Quinn. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Krista.
I'm Krista Hepburn. I've been speaking with Master Gardener Quentin Wine on County Grows.
Thank you very much, Krista and Quentin. Now, after a very short break, I will be back with Charlotte Hill from Music at Port Milford.